Well, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We're glad you've joined us tonight. We are going to be talking about discovery learning and just how that prepares children for the future. And that may seem kind of a strange subject, but it's really fitting to kind of how education is changing. And we have a special guest with us tonight, Liesel Ulrich Verderber. I hope I said that right.
Close enough. It's
okay.
But sorry, I've heard much different variations.
Okay. But your organization is approaching education from a very different perspective. And I think it's the wave of the future. And we had talked about this when we did a shorter interview a while ago on Giving Tuesday. And that's why we're revisiting the subject again tonight, is we want to really dive into discovery learning, what it is and how parents can use it. And it's so well fitted too for children who learn differently, for our right brain learners who often don't fit well into the left brain education system. And so I'm really excited about that. And so Liesel, you're a partner organization with Sped Homeschool.
Yep.
And your organization is called EWSED, is what you call it. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization and just what you do, and we'll kind of go from there after we get everybody introduced to who you are and the wonderful organization you represent.
Yeah. So thank you. First of all, thank you so much for having me back. My name is Liesel and I am the founder of EWC Ed, and we are a website that's dedicated to getting students, teaching students through the lens of curiosity. So we're about sort of introducing students to topics, getting them curious about them, connecting them to the wider world, and in doing so, sort of opening up the doors of possibility. So that, like in it, like we say in this in the sphere of discovery-based learning, is really fueling learning through curiosity. And so we are a free website that curates incredible video content that's not your typical run-of-the-mill educational content.
Oh, no.
And it's from great sources that you can find on YouTube, and are really curating, giving you sort of the opportunity to explore the world without having to go through YouTube yourself, and pairing those great videos with topics of discussion, ways to connect that video content to the wider world in a really direct way. We have a section called Why It Matters, which is really important to us. And so the idea is that we help kids and educators connect the sort of nuts and bolts of learning by broadening their horizons and letting them learn a little bit more about a whole lot of things, so that school becomes and learning becomes more applicable for them. And so that's what we do.
You cover a little bit, but then once they get that little bit, they can dive deeper.
Exactly.
And so you're hitting, like you said, the curiosity.
Yeah, the curiosity piece is really important for us, because I think, you know, as we were talking to educators, as we were developing EWC Ed, one of the things that we found was a huge sort of pain point for educators was there's great, you know, places like Newzella and Khan Academy that are out there, but they're sort of for the students that already know what they're interested in, right? They already, for the kids that want to dig down deeper. But, you know, it's really tough to have sort of a teachable moment if, you know, for instance, our STEM teachers, you know, it's hard to have a teachable moment if kids don't know we've landed a rover on Mars, or we've, you know, we have people in a space station above our heads. Like, that's the stuff that gets kids excited about math and science. And even social studies and the arts. I mean, if all you know about the world is what you've seen on, you know, TV, you're certainly not excited to go learn about new places. And so our idea here is to get kids learning about all kinds of little different things across the globe. And so maybe one of them sparks that inspiration, that curiosity to start digging deeper and becoming a more engaged learner in that way.
And I think we talked about this in our last interview too, was global education.
Yeah.
And just like you said, it gets them out of from their perspective as well. Because, you know, I've traveled with my own children and seen how that affects them to be able to experience. And that's what videos do too.
Yeah.
They immerse us into a world that that we're not used to. And it gives us that experience, even if it's just a little bit, but a taste, again, curiosity.
It's enough to get you curious. Actually, on that same vein, I was just speaking with a school in our area here, bringing a new educator on board. And it was one of those sort of pitches that I felt I'd really not nailed. And I was like, oh, I did a bad job. And almost immediately, one of the educators emailed me and said, hey, I recently started seeing the world with my fiance. We started traveling more. And I know that my kids don't have the opportunity to travel like I did and have the world open up like I did as like a 20-something. You know, I think EWC Ed is a great way to open up the world for my students. And so, you know, that's how educators are picking up on it. And that was with very little prompting from me. And so it is really important that we give kids a really broad knowledge of the world, especially in the, when we talk about discovery-based learning, because that's how you're going to start finding the corners you want to dig deeper into and the places you want to explore more, which is really a good driver, especially if you're putting a little more scaffolding around those broader, you know, questions and around those broader topics. I think that you can really create a really innovative learning plan that engages students and allows you to teach much easier with much less work, because it's curiosity driven. You're not sort of pulling them along. They're the ones that are driving with their own questions and their own desire for discovery.
Exactly. And so also, you know, we're talking about how this prepares children for the future as well. You're exposing them, you know, when you used to ask a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, they give you those standard answers. Well, I want to be a fireman, be everything that they can see. You're exposing them now to fields of study and things that are just on the cutting edge of happening. I mean, your website does such a good job about that. This is something new that somebody's doing. And wow, what if that's maybe my calling? You know, the majority of jobs that the studies say that the majority of jobs that our children, the young children now that are going to fill, don't even exist yet.
I mean, if I think about like my current job did not exist. I mean, I made it, but you know, I didn't exist before when I was in school. And I just heard a really great quote. I can't remember where I heard it, but it's, you can't be what you can't see. And so if kids have never seen it, and we found this in our own research when we were building the website, you know, if kids only know that they can be whatever their parents are, and their parents are, you know, they grew up in poverty and they don't want the life their parents led, or their parents tell them to do better, but all they know is the three jobs, maybe what their grandmother was and their dad and their mom, maybe an uncle, especially in rural communities where there's, that's, you know, all you know and all you can see. It's really disappointing and disheartening for kids. And I think disengages them a lot from their own education. And so this idea of exposing kids to the world in a positive way, showing them all they can be. I mean, not every kid is going to grow up and can't, there's not enough space archaeology jobs. Not every kid's going to make it to space archaeologists. Not every kid is going to become a nanotechnician. But, you know, I like to think of like when we were headed to the moon, right? Every kid wanted to be an astronaut. My father grew up really, really, really poor. There was no way he was going to become anything other than a tile layer like his dad, and he was fine with that. But you know, he wanted to be an astronaut because that's what he saw on TV, and like that's what he wanted to be. And so it kept him in science longer, it kept him in mathematics longer, and he ended up becoming a dentist, which is not an astronaut. but it kept him in the STEM fields longer because he was interested in becoming something, you know, pretty lofty. And so I think, again, if we expose kids to stuff that's way out there, they might not make, I mean, some of them will make it out there, which is incredible. But they'll make it, you know, further down the line or find some other thing that fulfills their passion and who they feel like they should be.
It opens up the world to dreaming and imagining and seeing beyond what the possible is right here, that there are other options. And I think just opening your children to that possibility is such a big thing, especially when we see kids, especially that have learning disabilities, they see a lot of failure in education, but discovery learning is not a fail thing. I want to move to your website and kind of go through some of the pages so we can introduce everyone to that. I can pull up another screen here. And maybe you can kind of walk us through, and I'm going to have to switch back and forth here to figure out where I'm at. There I am. Okay. So can you see that screen as
well? Yep, I can see it. Yep.
Okay. So if you want me to move around on it or do anything, just let me know and I can, I can do that.
Yeah. So this is the homepage for EWC Ed. Mm-hmm. You'll see there that we publish a new touchstone every Tuesday and Thursday. And you'll see, so those are our most recent three. All three of them are great. And then below that, every day we refresh a bunch from our archive. So if you come every day, you'll see a new four down below there. But you can access our full library of touchstones by hitting that yellow button there after the first three.
Oh, right here.
Yep. And that'll take you to our full library, which you can jump into.
Okay.
And there you can search the entire archive just by scrolling through. Or if you're interested in finding a particular topic, you can go to the categories, or I believe it's called subjects page. Pull down menu there, and you'll see our touchstones laid out by category. So if you're looking for a very specific topic, you can look there. We also have tags that allow you to get a little bit more granular. And then we try and do a pretty good job tagging. So if you are looking for something that's, let's say you're looking for the arts and you want sculpture, or you're looking for physics or chemistry, those you can type in there in the search box, or pretty much any topic, oceans, for instance, and you'll be able to search there. So that's just a way of being able to search if you are an educator. If you are a student, a great way to sort of as an educator passing this on to a student who, you know, you want to see where they want to explore, corners they want to investigate, just jumping into a category based on whatever subject you're teaching that day is a great way to get involved, get started there. We also have educators who teach this by saying during enrichment period, you know, find a touchstone that you are interested in and then answer one of the questions to the class and tell us why it's interesting or engaging or what you learned. And that's, again, more of a discovery-based learning application for EWC Ed that we've seen. And if you want to jump into one of the touchstones.
I've got the two that you gave me.
Let's jump into one of those, because I think both of those have been used in some really interesting cases for some discovery-based learning. So this is a great touchstone, a great story about this great thing called micro museums. And their whole idea was that, you know, there's lots of kids that don't have access to museums. Mm. So how do we make it museums a space where people feel comfortable, because there are some people who just don't feel comfortable going to museums.
Right.
There's also, and I'm sure there's a lot of families that are involved with sped homeschooling that, you know, perhaps there's too much
sensory stuff
going on and so on and so forth. So they've done an amazing job taking museums concepts and turning them into museums the size of vending machines.
Wow.
Yeah, and they place them all over the place, in post offices and in courtyards and all over New York City, in places where people will run into them who are, you know, average people. And what one of the great things that one of the groups that we're working with, they're actually a school that's an alternative school, so they work with a lot of kids who would normally be in the special ed system in schools. They are doing a great project as a team where they're now building their own micro museum. So they have... they were doing this thing called rapid fire, where they rapidly went through a bunch of the touchstones as a team or as a class. And they found this one just really sparked their curiosity. And so now they're building a micro museum about one of the local parks near their school. And they're working with the local parks department to get bits and pieces for the different, for the different components of the micro museum. And it's going to change seasonally. And so now the students are learning through the touchstone that sort of sparked the idea. Now they're learning about the ecology of the area, how to do curation, how to do all these sort of things. And then wonderfully, they're also doing a project where they have an educator at the school who's going over to Ireland. And they are building sort of a local micro museum in a box that they can send over with this teacher to Ireland to try and sort of say, here's who we are in you know, Vermont, and who are you, and build your own micro museum. And so this is one of the ways we've seen sort of discovery-based learning as a class with individuals sort of getting the idea sparked and then moving on to something a little bit more meaningful, a little bit more in-depth.
Personalizing it.
Yeah, exactly. And so each one of our touchstones has this area called Why It Matters, if you want to scroll down a little bit there. So we suggest you read the intro, just get some background, watch the video, check out the Why It Matters section. We're really intentional there about applying it. So you as an educator, as a parent, can sort of really help your student connect it to the wider world. And then we have our discussion questions, which is a really great way to start to pull out essential questions students might want to start investigating for further research. Again, with discovery-based learning, we found that these questions are great starting points for further inquiry, for students. And we're starting to change some of our question types so that we're asking students with that third question to think about how they might react or how they might change the world in their own way. You won't see it on every single touchstone. We're just trying it out as a as one of our question types. So it's sort of a call to action question. Which we think would be it's really great at spurring on the discovery portion of things. And so those are all great ways that you can have a jumping off point as an educator with your students. And then of course down here, if you wanna go further into a particular creator, all of our creators, we love the creators that we work with EWC Ed. You can check out their YouTube channels right there. We link you guys to their actual YouTube channels. So they have far more videos than we can ever, put on the site.
Exactly. And
so
it's
a great place if you're a parent and let's say you're trying to teach science and we don't have a touchstone on your particular topic, SciFry is a great place to jump in or even to have students dig into more. And then for further inquiry, if you're looking for more touchstones, down at the bottom we have related touchstones. These are a little less, these are more tangential than like direct next steps, but you might find some good sort of roads to discovery there as well to sort of get students diving in deeper. So that's one of the ways you could use Touchstone to either spark an outside the classroom or outside the Touchstone process of inquiry or an internal process of inquiry as well. And then I have a great story about the other touchstone that I sent you. This one is great. It's a little oddball, you might think. So it's about, should we all be eating insects? And the answer is yes. I have like my cricket protein right here. but so for the students, firstly, they had this great discussion about, hey, should we eat insects? It's actually way better thing for the environment. It uses less water. So they got to have a bit of a conversation about environmental impact. And then one of the students who works at Ponderosa Steakhouse was like, well, what if we calculated how much water it would take for like the weekend of steaks at Ponderosa versus if we did just cricket burgers? And so then they had the math teacher come in and they actually sat down and they did the math about how much water it takes to grow a cow and how much water it takes to grow the same amount of protein from crickets. So they got the math teacher involved. And then they had an outside educator come in and they did a whole buffet of bug foods. So then they got to talk about culture. So they had students who are from Southeast Asian cultures at the school who got to talk a little bit about their culture and how in their culture it's not strange to eat insects. And so from this one touchstone about a peculiar topic to us of eating bugs, they got to learn math, they got to have a cultural component, they even got to learn how to make food, and they also got to learn about environmental science as well. So this is one of those ways that our touchstones are really about, this discovery-based learning. If we've got an interesting enough topic, we can pull a lot of different things from it. So again, an oddball one, but one that has certainly sparked a lot of curiosity in a lot of students.
Yeah, and it's gross. So the boys love it.
They're very into it. I can recommend cricket protein. I was on the fence, but now they convinced me. In fact, they were a catalyst. They were so excited by their bug feast that they had as a school that I had to try out cricket protein. And now I'm a convert, and so is my trainer. So.
Yeah, I've seen it on cooking shows. I've even seen it highlighted in tacos. But
yeah, the kids had cricket tacos. They said it was very good. I told them they should have invited me. They helped me with that. but yeah, these are some of the ways that we've seen EWC Ed be really easily integrated into a discovery-based learning in classrooms with multiple students in one-on-one teaching settings. We're really trying, like I've said before, to get students. Just spark a moment of curiosity. And one of the great ways to do that is with the rapid fire. So if you are an educator, a parent who is just trying to find a topic that might spur on a lot of learning, The rapid fire is a new way that the school that we're working with, that's an alternative school, is using it with their students, where they'll just take 15 minutes to just quickly watch the shorter videos, the ones that are sort of under 5 minutes, and jump in. And then based on that, you can actually on our site, above every single one of the listings, there is like the time it would take to watch the video and do the to watch the video, so you'll be able to know how quickly you can get through them. So that's a great way to find something that will spark inquiry and give you a starting point as an educator to jump into some broader topics.
Great. Yeah, it just dropped without my touching it. So I guess we've had enough bugs on the screen.
Enough bugs on the screen.
So you are connected with another website called Ever Widening Circles.
Yes.
Do you want to
yes.
explain a little bit about that relationship? Yes. And I'll pull up their website
yes.
as well, so you can talk about that.
Yeah. Ever Widening Circles is a website that has been around now for 5 years. And we started, actually, my mom started it. She's a dentist by trade, but woke up one morning to a really terrible story of beheading on NPR. And this was 5 years ago. This is before we were in sort of the news quandary we're in now. Mm-hmm. And she's just, you know, she had lived all over the world. She had traveled a lot. And she was like, this is not the world I know. This is, why aren't we hearing about any insight or innovation that's happening? And so she just started scouring the internet for anything out there that didn't have insane ads coming at you, you know, like the thing that you just looked at on Amazon,
right,
or
exactly.
pop-up flashing at you, or some crazy political bias left or right or whatever. And there's nothing out there. And so she just said, well, I can do it, which, you know, she couldn't even get on Facebook at the time. And she was like, I can start a website. Anyone can. So she started this website, publishing one article a day on any subject under the sun, as long as it was proving it was still an amazing world. And again, writing without any political bias, without insane advertising, just the stuff we should all know about that was meaningful and newsworthy, that was uplifting in a way. So, you know, as much as we love these stories of puppy adoption, you know, she wanted to do something a little bit more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we curate.
Well, and they get you thinking. I mean,
yeah.
I love these subjects. I mean, they could be more in tune for like a high school student,
right?
You know,
right,
looking
right.
To things.
So we had educators coming and asking us sort of that exact thing. They were saying, "Can we use this in the classroom?" Mm-hmm. And I took on the job of turning it into EWC Ed. So we curate the shorter ones, the ones that are, you know, making sure there's no bad language, which we don't have very much. And if there is, we always put a note. But mm-hmm. you know, we curate the ones that would be great for the classroom, and then we pair those with those thought questions. So EWC Ed is the sort of education specific one, but we do have educators, just because EWC Ed doesn't have as much content on it yet. We have educators use EWC as a primary teaching tool. So they will just have the students look over all the articles and pull one that interests them, and then do a little presentation on it to the class or back to their educator. So that's how our parent site is being used as well. And it's also a great site, I think, as a parent, to sort of keep you going.
Definitely.
I think that we don't encourage people enough to say like, hey, I need a break from, not a break from the news, but something that allows me to look at the news in a positive way, digest it, and then, you know, allow us to talk to our children about it in a way that's more meaningful and not as scary. And so it's a great tool both for educators and for students, I think.
Well, and it broadens your learning. And as an adult, we need to keep learning. We need to keep exposing ourselves to different things, just like we're doing with our children, too.
Exactly.
I mean, that's one thing I loved about homeschooling when my kids were younger, is because I was always learning, too. And, you know, now I'm to the point where I've almost graduated them all, and I've got to keep going. You know, I have a book a month that I read just to broaden my horizons. Mm-hmm. And this is another quick way that I get that any adult could add that into their make, you know, more global in how you think and see things and from other people's perspectives. And I think the more we can digest things, we don't always have to agree with them, but but the willingness
Yes. Yeah.
To look at life through another person's eyes.
And is really important. I think as an educator who's trying to teach through discovery-based learning, you know, you have to know a little bit more about the world sometimes mm-hmm. than you may think. And this is a good way of learning alongside your student, and also, yes. you know, giving yourself sort of keeping yourself one step ahead, perhaps, so you can mm-hmm. sort of nudge in a direction of inquiry for your students. So it's an easy way as you as an educator to sort of keep educated, as well as pushing your students to sort of follow different avenues mm-hmm. that they may not know about. So it's a good companion tool, I think, to EWC Ed.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. So discovery learning, as we're talking about it, we've talked about your touchstones and the mm-hmm. questions that mm-hmm. you build in. So discovery learning is not just sending kids off to learn on their own and discover what they can mm-hmm. and leave them at that. And you had sent me some stuff that you had about research as well mm-hmm. and how there's some important factors in making discovery learning successful.
Yeah.
So let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So it's an interesting study that looked at discovery-based learning and what factors contribute to more successful discovery-based learning. Mm-hmm. And so they looked at sort of two groups, one that had sort of unfacilitated discovery-based learning. So students were just mm-hmm. sort of, you know, going through their own process of inquiry without any structural components. Right. And the study found that the students learned best when they were provided feedback, when they were given worked examples, when they were asked to give explanations and mm-hmm. teach by teaching others. Mm-hmm. And so they found this scaffolding method of discovery learning that wasn't just, okay, go find something interesting and, you know, learn about it. Right. You know, actually, you know, providing feedback and pushing kids beyond and giving them some scaffolding was actually much more beneficial to students than sort of unassisted discovery learning. In fact, they found there's not a benefit to doing that mm-hmm. at all. And so I think that's a really key part of discovery-based learning is really this process of, you know, as an educator, giving scaffolding to the mm-hmm. learning, as opposed to just saying, run free, do your best. It's really an important part to provide that scaffolding, mm-hmm. which we start to do with the questions. And as, you know, as our tool, those questions are meant for educators to sort of start mm-hmm. the process. Mm-hmm. But we don't want it to end there. Certainly not.
That's a very good point.
We want it mm-hmm. to go further. You know your student best. So mm-hmm. it's difficult for us to know how you're teaching the touchstone because they can apply to yes. so many different topics. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I strongly suggest, you know, the touchstones are great to just jump in wherever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking ahead, coming up with particular questions you might want to push them towards, asking them to dive deeper or find their own research is really important mm-hmm. Because like we talked about, you know, most of these are sort of broad topics and you mm-hmm. can learn a lot, but it's not certainly not all the meat you can put on the bone.
Definitely. Yeah. So scaffolding, you know, a scaffold, it's built one on top of another. Yeah. And so that's what's great when you provide the starting point, mm-hmm. the scaffold mm-hmm. off of that to build it. But like you said, the teacher, the parent, whoever's working with that child knows other scaffolding pieces mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. are part of that child's puzzle.
Exactly.
And so how do you build that in? And that, so thinking as an educator, we start bringing in things that relate to their life that we can bridge. Mm-hmm. And to make that connection stronger. You know, neuroscience too is pointing so much at relationships are key to embedding information into our brains. Learning data will not make our knowledge meaningful. It's how we interact with another person and we apply it, how we mirror, and like you said, teach, explain, and how we can respond back with another person. Mm-hmm. It finally becomes part of us mm-hmm. and we can take that knowledge and build upon that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, leaving your child to just do whatever.
Yeah. And I think, I think there's something wonderful to be said that homeschooling offers in that, you know, if you have a classroom of 30 students, you have to at least pretend you're the expert on things so you can sort of have control of the classroom, right? Whereas if you're working with your student and your child who, you know, maybe already knows that you're not perfect and know everything, you can, you know, be having a teachable moment when you yourself don't know everything about a particular mm-hmm. subject and say, like, let's dive in, let's get curious. And I think mm-hmm. I think mirroring and mimicking, like, if we have a young student and you say, well, you know, I'm curious about that too, let's dive in, that creates sort of an active learning style from mm-hmm. the get-go that I think is really important and key to success down the road is if we're teaching in a way that is saying, okay, like, we don't know the answer and that's good. And mm-hmm. let's continue down the road. I think we're homeschooling parents are very fortunate in that they can have those moments of, you know, I don't know either. And that's good. Let's dig on down the road mm-hmm. here and really find out what we can find. And I think that gives the student a sense of ownership of the knowledge that they get from that.
Definitely. And if you are willing to let your schedule go. Some teachers, even homeschool parents, hold on to that pretty tightly.
Yeah.
There can be a huge bounty of learning that mm-hmm. we can allow our child to obtain if we are a little more loose on those schedules.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's definitely true. We were talking last week with an expert on autistic children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how they get stuck in these tracks where they fixate on something. Mm-hmm. And she said, let them go on that subject. And it's very much in line with what we've been talking about. You know, why pull them off and say, we got to do this now? Right. If they are ready to learn, make it worthwhile. Right.
Yeah, get creative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's, again, one of the beautiful things about being able to homeschool your child is saying, okay, where is that process of inquiry? And, you know, being able to sit one-on-one with a kid who might be really interested in entomology, right? Really interested in bugs. Sorry, we're back on bugs, but
that's okay.
you know, cause I think it's one of those things, like, there are kids, you know, my parents see this all the time with kids that come in and they're in, you know, third, fourth grade and they love bugs or they love Egyptology or they, something nerdy. Mm-hmm. And by the time they hit eighth grade, it's, you know, socially kind of beaten out of them to not love that anymore. Where by if we are able to hold, you know, in our hands and say, okay, this is what you love. Let's find a way to teach mm-hmm. through that. I think you create people who become incredibly successful in mm-hmm. whatever track they end up going into because it's been their passion since they were, you know, in third grade. And I think one of the things that I find most sad about my job sometimes is talking to a group of fourth graders who are so excited to learn about everything. They want me to, like, send them, you know, a hydra or like an owl, which I don't have in my office. So I can't send them those. And then they're so excited to learn. They're jumping out of their seats to tell me about what they learned. And then we get to eighth graders who were those fourth graders, but 4 years ago, and they have lost that spirit of inquiry. And I think homeschooling is great in that it allows you to keep that spirit of inquiry alive. You know, there's not the social pressure to leave that behind. So I think discovery-based learning is great in that sense too.
I've been reading this book, it's called Viral. I had to read this quote because it so went with this, but it's called Viral. And it's talking about social media and how the concept of our thinking has changed completely because of social media and how the Gutenberg press was developed, we turned all to knowledge mm-hmm. and print base. Mm-hmm. And before we were a social society. And mm-hmm. so everything we did, it was based on social interactions. Mm-hmm. But yet his quote was, Gutenberg culture was a society hooked on control. It controlled the knowledge. But then he said, the only institutions that can look forward to a future are those that transition from regulation to resource.
Interesting.
And he went on, there's a couple more sentences that I want to read. It says, to effectively resource Googlers. Now, he said, Googlers are basically anybody born after 1974 which I'm not, although I'm a Googler wannabe, you have to take into account their learning style and learn to contextualize your own. We don't have the space here to introduce, and he talked about teaching styles that we must attend to for this TG, he calls them a TGIF culture, mm-hmm. Twitter, Google, Instagram, and Facebook. But it begins with authority figures who no longer control access to information, but instead help students access and process information. Suffice to say that in a Google world, you don't standardize, you customize. And this book has been mind-blowing to me, just about how much our culture has flipped on how we learn. Brains are been rewired. Our children, and one quote in there, it says your fourth grader looks at the toilet, or looks at the internet like you look at the toilet.
Right.
It's useful. You know, it's been around since I have been here, and we don't think about that in my generation.
Oh, totally.
But
and I think it changes the process of what inquiry is, right? Like, you know, for even me growing up when I was, you know, before the internet was ubiquitous, I had to learn the skill of like going to a research book in the research library section in, you know, fourth grade, picking up the book that was bigger than I was and searching through for the answer to my question. And so we're in this kind of wonderful space where we don't have to do the when, like who, what, when, where, sort of questions. We can now jump into why and how, and so we can, which are much deeper questions, right? They're the questions that get you to think creatively. You know, I was talking to an educator yesterday who he used to do this project where it was sort of inquiry-based learning, and they would pick a topic. Let's say it's, you know, the gold rush, and you had to come up with your own investigation question that was not a when, who, what, when, where question. It had to be a how or a why. And this, you know, made a room of fourth graders, fourth and fifth graders, I think, come up with incredible questions. They wanted to learn about how architecture changed and how family dynamics changed. And, you know, it wasn't just right now I can Google when the gold rush was, right? Whereas so for these kids, this is not a good question, right? It can be answered in 3 seconds on Wikipedia.
And that can drive you crazy if that's how you grew up and those are the only answers you know how to give.
Right. And I think when we couldn't Google, I always think about this when I'm, you know, we were talking about before this, when I'm on camping trips and I have a question, my camping partner and I will have long discussions because we can't Google it, right? So we do want to know the who, what, where, when. And we have to think, well, you know, maybe it was this because this other thing. So, you know, it does. Like you said, it rewires the way that you, if you can just Google it, then it's over and you don't have to think about it anymore. But if you are now moving towards questions that are asking more complexities and to talk about systems, that there is no one correct answer, perhaps, and you have to bring in more than one resource, then you really start to get into what's possible with discovery-based learning.
Yeah. And it really is. It's, I think, our traditional education system is pushing children towards our traditional job of today, but they're not preparing them for tomorrow.
Because
those are going to be completely different, and they're like how much you can be customized, how different you can be, is going to be the most important thing, not how much you can fit in. And I, you know, I love that about homeschooling. Is I had my 21-year-old. And I had a discussion today about his summer internship because he doesn't know what he wants to do. And he's majoring in biomedical engineering. And I was like, so what fascinates you, you know? And so that was, and he just started talking and thinking, it's like, don't you think about this? But they don't. You have to ask him the question
because
he's so ingrained in his studies and other things that, you know, are weighing him down. And we have to get outside of those bubbles. And, being able to have somebody, you know, like your website gets you outside those bubbles. It asks you questions that make you think outside of where your normal thought patterns would go. And so
I think the successful people of tomorrow are those that can synthesize multiple fields really well and can think cross-disciplinarily, which, is really vital. And again, I think leads into those question types that are more, you know, sort of broadly thinking, you know, I don't think, you know, even I think biomedical engineering or, you know, anything that's diving into two subjects, that's no longer useful. I mean, it used to be like when I was growing up, I really do feel like you could have two things that you're interested in and you're going to be fine. And now I think it's all about how you can learn to synthesize. It's how you can take totally disparate ideas and start to put them together in new ways. That's the innovative thinking that the bosses of tomorrow are hiring for, the jobs of tomorrow will be. Because those very linear jobs, while they are very important, are becoming less and less, unfortunately, valuable to society.
Because we can automate them.
Exactly, exactly. So to me, this, if you, to connect back how discovery-based learning can really, you know, help students change their futures and and think about the job market and think about all those things that are scary and down the line. You know, the more that we can expose students to a broad variety of topics, the more they can have a conversation with a potential boss in a potential internship and be able to have a little bit of knowledge about a lot of things. And I think that broad thinking, it's a type of thinking that, you know, employers are looking for. It's a type of thinking that leads to great innovation. It leads to the next tech startup. It leads to the next great innovation. And I think it's really valuable to be able to think in those ways. And just naturally, and discovery-based learning, and especially if you're homeschooling, that's a great place to develop those sort of multiple roads of inquiry and that synthetic, I guess you could say, that process of synthesis way of thinking.
I think it was in the same book that I was reading, is talking about, you know, bigger was the best thing to go for, and we are becoming much more of a boutique type style of society, where if you have something different, you're valuable, versus if you grow bigger and you're the best. Nobody wants that anymore. And plus, you know, the my kids always say, well, nobody trusts the organizations anymore. You know, it's either, you know, a face or an individual, somebody you can relate to, that you just have to, you have to be able to relate. And otherwise it just doesn't fly.
Exactly.
But I wanted to dive into a couple two things that homeschoolers specifically related with discovery learning, because there's two, I guess we call them like buzzwords in the homeschooling field. And the first one is, I wrote them down because I forget, delight-directed learning, which is very similar to discovery learning, but just wherever your child's, you know, has a passion, to let them go and study. And there are, there's different parental, I guess, thought patterns on how to do that. But I just really want to stress to our parents who do that, to really think about what we talked about, scaffolding, and the need to be involved in that process, not to just let your child be delighted and send them off to wherever they are, or hire somebody to work with your student. Like, my daughter goes to art classes. She has a French tutor. She's taking a class from a Disney animator right now, because those are the fields that she's interested in. That's where her delights are directed. And I need other people speaking into her life just as much as I do. And so that's important.
If I could jump in just on one thought on that, you know, one of the best ways to learn is to become a little bit comfortable with failure. And I don't think this is anxiety that we equate delight with failure. you know, you learn from your mistakes is all of us are taught, right? And I think that loving what you do, there's delight is delightful. It's great, right? It makes me feel really positive. But at the end of the day, feeling positive all day doesn't necessarily give me the same feeling of accomplishment that, like, having to trudge a little bit up the hill. I know it's
hard for it.
You worked hard for it, and you learned a new thing. And it probably wasn't delightful when you screwed up four times, but you learned way more along the way than just being purely delighted in whatever you did along the way. So that's my one sort of insight on delight-based learning, is that as an educator, you grow on your growing edges, and those, and you expand on your growing edges, right? And those are not always purely delightful places to be.
Exactly. But yes, that sense of accomplishment is so really important.
And I think the idea of, we use this term in our team called rigorous intention, right? We know when someone is doing their job with rigorous intention. You know when the kid who's bagging your groceries at the grocery store is applying rigorous intention. You know, they may not get it right all the time, but they're trying really hard. And they may be doing the easiest job, but they're trying really hard, right? Yes. You know when your server does it. You know when your student is doing it. So the idea of maybe teaching not through delight, but with what is sparking their rigorous intention is probably going to push your student farther down the road than what's just purely delightful. Because, you know, your daughter, she's delighted by art, but, you know, it takes rigorous intention. You got to learn the basics to be really good at art.
Exactly. Yes.
Mathematics and everything else. But the rigorous intention to me is super, super important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you get them to a point where they have some sort of, you know, I guess, platform to stand on. You know, they've got enough to make that first climb, that first step. And then you push them just a little bit. You know, you don't have to be militaristic about it.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like I signed her up for this class with this Disney animator and I said, he's going to grade you.
Right.
So yes, that it, we're moving up a step. And in her art club on Friday, she's teaching. I said, I volunteered you.
There you go.
Well, so, but that's it, like, yeah, it's that pushing and that accomplishing and it does get them.
Yeah. And I think you're preparing your student better for the world of college. Again, it's scary to think two steps down the line and hard when you are in the trenches. I know it is. But your college professor is definitely not going to think that their exam is delightful. You know, and your boss is not going to have you doing delightful things all the time. You know, again, it's this idea that I think for preparing students to be, you know, meaningful parts of the workforce, or, you know, get to the next level of college or technical school, there's a level of rigor and grit that comes with that, that, you know, the more that we teach our kids to just embrace that difficulty, the more that we really prepare them for the future to say, I don't get this. And that's a good thing. I'm going to learn more. You know, it's just like, you know, I try and equate this to sports sometimes. Like if you can't make a free throw, you don't say, well, I'm never shooting a free throw again.
Exactly. And
you can't do that. It's basketball. So you get better at it. And so the next time you're up at the line, you know, you might not make the shot every time, but you're going to do better than you did when you said, I'm not good at this. I'm leaving. You can't leave the whole sport.
Yeah, no. And I mean, if you've practiced for 10 years and you still don't get it, then maybe you can give up. But, but yes, there is a lot of value into just pushing through and teaching our kids that that's a necessary part of learning is hitting some walls and to keep
and
going.
Frustration. And giving kids the coping mechanisms for to deal with frustration in a productive way to say, why am I hitting a wall? How do I push through? As opposed to I'm hitting a wall. It's not my fault. I can't deal with this. I'm moving on to something else.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. The other buzzword that I wanted to talk a little bit about is what we call unschooling. And it more or less, again, depending on the parent, can be very much discovery-based learning, but it can be, again, a free-for-all. And no schedule and really no subject either. And no focus. It's just wherever the day leads, that's what we're learning about. And, you know, that's nice. Like in your touchstones on your website, you've got little snippets. And I think you'd agree that it's good to introduce children to a lot of different things. And to kind of facilitate that a little bit by telling them where to go, how much time they have. And yes, follow through with the whole lesson before you decide that this is something you're not interested in. So what is the value in that?
You know, I think that it's one of those, I think it falls in line with rigorous intention. I think that you, and I know kids are real good actors. I probably was as a kid, or maybe I was better than I thought. But, it, you know, rigorous intention is, again, a good place to start if you are wanting to do unschooling. You know, the rigorous intention of the student to, you know, let's say you're unschooling and you're going on for a nature walk, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a place for unschooling in saying we're going to have a theme and we're going to go through it. And the idea, again, of rigorous intention is to rigorously investigate something. Mm-hmm. And so I think in terms of unschooling, very much so, you know, if we're to tie it back to EWC Ed, it's, you know, start the day with a touchstone. And let that maybe, again, develop the roads of inquiry for the day. But maybe you pick one of the questions that mm-hmm. leads the questioning for the day. And perhaps you don't set a set schedule. You say, okay, we've gone from this to this, and maybe we're going to cover math today somehow. So let's find some way to bring math into whatever touchstone we see. Mm-hmm. To me, this idea of doing it in a way that is at least moderately structured, the science is there, the data is there, that is better mm-hmm. for your student. And again, I think in this idea of preparation, unschooling, I would say, is perhaps good, as you know, not all workplaces are incredibly regimented. Mm-hmm. And so maybe teaching flexibility is good through the process of unschooling. The idea of, like, when something comes, let's be able to change it up quickly. But again, that comes with structure. That comes with sort of teaching the idea of flexibility along with the idea of unschooling.
That's so
right?
True.
It's to say, we had a set schedule, or we had an idea of what we were going to get out of the end of the day. And instead we headed down this corner, which is great. Mm-hmm. So what did we learn from heading down that corner? Just even wrapping it up at the end of the day, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. is a good way to help your student process why we did what we did. And then... Sure. How it can be applicable to the outside world. I mean, I'm a big applicable to the outside world person.
Yes.
And definitely. So I think if you, you know, are using EWC Ed or any resource with the process mm-hmm. of unschooling, of following whatever happens in the day, do take a little time at the end of the day, just say, what did we learn today? What do you think, why do you think we broke the schedule and right. went down that process? Because that is mm-hmm. going to help your student more than anything be able to process and then understand why being flexible is important, or why encouraging a spirit of inquiry is important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's decision making, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. isn't that one of the most important skills that we can
right.
we can teach our children is right. what's important to make decisions and how do we make those decisions? What do we base our decisions on mm-hmm. and what makes something way more valuable than another thing? And
yeah.
where does that lead us? You know, right. we, like you're talking about, you know, learning through mistakes as well. Our day could end in a mess. Well, we didn't learn anything at all because this led to this and it was a catastrophe.
Right, right.
But maybe that's what we learned today.
Yeah, and that's the process you learned. And I think it's wonderful to, and I think both of those methods come down to structure and rigorous mm-hmm. intention. Have rigorous intention as an educator. You know, have a way that you'd like to generally direct the day. Come at it with at least half a plan. You know, I think that's really important and vital. And then if you go off plan, talk about it with your student, why you went off plan. Why did you, you know, you came with a day and you said, we're going to teach English today, and instead the process of inquiry led us down learning about environmental science. Why did we do that? Why did we choose mm-hmm. one over the other as being more important?
Yes.
I think that what's important about scaffolding is it helps your student understand. Students are not just going to automatically just be like, I totally understand why we did what we did today,
exactly.
Especially younger kids. But by giving them the tools, again, scaffolding a little bit to say, here's mm-hmm. why we chose to do what we do, I think you make it so much more valuable mm-hmm. for your student and give them something more to latch onto. And again, connecting it to down the road jobs mm-hmm. and school, you give them a really valuable skill set that allows mm-hmm. them, that is unique to being a homeschooler. And I think allows them to become very much more productive people in the workplace and also and learners beyond the homeschooling dimension.
Yeah, and I think and another dimension that parents who maybe teach more of a traditional method mm-hmm. need to understand about discovery-based learning is that, you know, we think about all those things my child needs to be able to do. They need to know their mm-hmm. math facts. They need to know. Well, when you do discovery-based learning, you begin to build those scaffolds. Mm-hmm. And so when you introduce more traditional types of educational learning, you've already got a base to build right. upon. And we don't often think about that when we give children math or reading or other things without those bases underneath them, we're asking them to attach something to learn with nothing there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's why young children learn so well in this manner. They're trying mm-hmm. to build as fast as they can. That's how right. their brains function even better. But the goal is to keep that going mm-hmm. because we know that in the future, in future jobs, this is an important skill that right. we have to not lose. Like you said, you have the fourth graders that are raring to ask all those questions, and then the eighth graders are done with it.
Right, right.
We can't right. lose that.
And I think what's really valuable about being a homeschooling educator is that, you know, your student might, I was a student that loved scaffolding. I love scaffolding. If you gave me an open-ended question, I was like, I don't understand this. But I had to learn the skills of how to connect disparate ideas mm-hmm. through discovery-based learning with a little more scaffolding. Whereas if you have a student who is much more inquiry-based and you do less regimented scaffolding, mm-hmm. That's super important. Know what motivates your student. Are they an obliging exactly. student who loves the scaffolding? Are they a questioning student? Mm-hmm.
To add on often to this, those are the most frustrating to teach, exactly. but they're the easiest when you're teaching this way.
Exactly. Are they internally driven? My sister is one of those, and she's an inquiry based person, 112%. She needs no one to tell her. She doesn't have to. She hates a rubric, right? I love okay. a rubric because it keeps me on task, but mm-hmm. she didn't want that. She would learn. She's brilliant, but she learned a different way. So knowing mm-hmm. the motivation style of your student, mm-hmm. just to learn that is really important. If you can check out the work of Gretchen Rubin on mm-hmm. the motivation styles, that might be a really valuable test to take with your student to find out mm-hmm. what motivates them. Are they a rebel? Are they internally motivated, externally mm-hmm. motivated? Are they a questioner? Learning that can be, I mean, we use that in the office to talk about how we motivate ourselves and like mm-hmm. as a team. And we found that incredibly valuable. And I'm sure it's a valuable asset to know about your student, to know how best to teach them and mm-hmm. what to try out.
That's a great resource. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And there's just so many things that I think we're just finally, you know, well, especially as our education, our ability to learn or our, I guess, our take on learning is changing mm-hmm. that as in traditional schools, it's going to take a lot longer. The process of changing how they teach is it has to go through so many levels of, you know, bureaucracy. But that's another benefit to homeschoolers is we can change it tomorrow.
Right.
And it can just be that way that our kids can have that up advantage to mm-hmm. be able to start learning.
Exactly.
So why don't you give us your website again as we're wrapping up so everybody knows where to find you.
Yep. So you can find us at EWCED, so EWCED.com. Mm-hmm. That's where you'll find the resources specifically for the classroom. Or you can check out Ever Widening Circles, like when you throw a pebble in a pond and it ripples mm-hmm. out, everwideningcircles.com. And there you'll find our parent website that has content probably more geared towards the high schooler age person or, you know, you yourself mm-hmm. as a parent. Both of those are free to use resources. And both of them are really about, you know, curiosity and possibility mm-hmm. and about connecting you and your student to the wider world. So those are two great resources you can use and you can find us at.
Yeah. And then you had two other resources that you sent me. One was a PBS.
Yes. Okay. So, and then two other places that you can jump into if you're an educator and you're looking for more content to jump into mm-hmm. with your student for discovery-based learning, PBS Digital Studios. Yeah, they have a whole suite of amazing YouTube channels about specific topics that you can jump mm-hmm. into. Again, it's PBS, so you know it's factual. You know that it's mm-hmm. good. You can check them out. Just Google PBS Digital Studios, and you'll see their mm-hmm. suite of channels, of YouTube channels. And then another resource as well is TED Ed. They're a great yeah. resource, again, to learn a little bit about a lot of things. And so again, if you're looking to just put your student in front of something to start out the day to find out mm-hmm. where we should go with the discovery-based learning, those don't necessarily have question. Neither of those have question right. types.
They don't have
with
the
them.
Questions built in.
Mm-hmm. But they're just a place to get started mm-hmm. as well. So yeah.
You can and then check in out your us. Touchstones, you have links to other.
I have links to others as well. So if there's a particular topic your student is interested in, usually if you check out the YouTube channel that video came from, you'll find more of similar content.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you for doing all that research. I know that's, mm-hmm. as a homeschooler, you know, and trying to teach three different kids at different age levels, it's yep, like, yep. what can we pull together in one evening, you know, so we can do it tomorrow. And, yep, you know, you yep. kind of have an idea where you're going, but yeah. it's nice to be able to have someone to do the legwork.
Yeah, well, we built EWC Ed with educators in mind for that exact purpose. We know you guys have so much to do. So I'm the one that's drudging through YouTube for 20 hours a week, watching some of the worst videos and some of the best, and writing the questions for you so you can get started. So you can actually do what you guys are passionate about, which is educating mm-hmm. and raising the next generation of thinkers. My job is just to facilitate you as an educator. And so awesome. The more we can continue doing that, the more we can raise it and the next generation mm-hmm. of global thinkers.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and these videos are going to be on YouTube next week. We'll get those edited. And also they're going to be on our brand new website. I have been programming this website for 6 weeks and it's like, I've had pulled all-nighters. I am so excited. It's such an interactive, fun site. So I hope you all enjoy it too when it comes out this weekend. But yes, and so that'll all be on there. I'm excited for that. But and also the podcast will come out on Sunday as well. And just thank you so much, Liesl. This has been such a good discussion, and I think one that is very pertinent to some changing tides.
Yeah.
In every area of education, from homeschooling, and it's Education Choice Week this week, and people are looking. What's mm-hmm. working, what's not working. Mm-hmm. And we have to ask those questions because yeah. it really depends on how we are shaping our children for the future and not.
Yeah. So, and the tools we give them to head off into the great unknown.
Exactly. Yes. It's kind of scary. I've already sent one off. But yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. Been kind of sparse tonight. I think everybody just decided to hunker in for the cold, and but definitely these videos will be seen throughout the week next week. Yeah. But for live next week, we have Michelle Davidson from Sparrow Ministries. She has a prayer ministry that she does with children, and we're going to be talking about leading children to healing and wholeness through prayer. And so that'll be exciting. I want to thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially sponsoring us, and for viewers like you who donate on our website at spedhomeschool.com. So let's keep the conversation going, everybody. And you can join in that conversation on our Sped Homeschool support group. We've got 1,500 members on there, and it's there's always something to talk about. Today we were talking about the weather and how cold is it where you are. And are you doing anything outside for homeschool? But anyways, so, and like I said, our website will be a new one. We'll be launching this weekend. So until then, we'll see you. Thanks again, Liesl. It's been
thank
wonderful.
You guys so much.
Thank you all for joining us.
Bye. Bye.